This is Around the Rim with LaChyna Robinson.
Hello, basketball fans. We're back. It's your ESPNW Women's Basketball Podcast, Around the Rim. I am your host, LaChyna Robinson, joined by my fantastic producer slash co-host. Yeah, she's about to get like an official
title change.
Tarika Foster Brasby, who has just been holding it down. Let me just start the show with saying, like, Tarika for real has been the MVP. I've been floating around with games and all kinds of stuff going on, and Tarika came through like a champ, not only for our Black History Month podcast, but also last week, Tarika hosted the entire podcast. Tarika, give yourself, can you put some claps in here? Because you have just been, the MVP. There you go.
I'm trying to be humble.
How was it? How was it hosting the show?
It was pretty cool. I think the best part has been the reception from the fans, because I hate the sound of my own voice sometimes. And so
to hear my voice that much,
I was like, wait a minute, they ain't tired of me talking yet?
No, when I hear your voice, I am always like, it sounds so refreshing. Like when you pop in, when we're having conversations and stuff, I'm like, oh, Tarika.
That's so funny. But no, it was cool. I'm glad to have you back though. LaChyna is definitely who makes this show go. So yeah.
Glad
to have you back.
No, we definitely, and fans, if you have not listened to last week's episode, Ashlyn Belmont and Mercer were all featured on last week's show, because Tarika and I just feel like, you know, obviously those are programs that are doing major things right now. You know, from Belmont and Mercer being ranked in the AP Top 25, Ashlyn's winning streak, it's just been fantastic. So we had all three head coaches from all three schools on, and you know, it's not always about the Power Five, and we get that, and we're sorry we don't give more attention to other schools, but we try to do what we can, and hopefully you guys will enjoy that show. Now, on today's show, we will have one of my favorite people in the entire world, and I'll tell you why a little later when I bring her on. But Gail Gesten-Cours has had amazing success as a head coach. When she left coaching, she ranked ninth all time in Division I for coaches and winning percentage. She guided her teams to 18 consecutive NCAA tournament bids, 13 as a head coach at Duke, 5 at Texas, and that includes 4 Final Four berths and 2 national championship game appearances. She was a 7-time ACC Coach of the Year. She was a WBCA and Naismith Coach of the Year in 2007. So this woman knows her basketball. She also coached at the USA basketball level. It was a USA Basketball Coach of the Year. So she's got experience at every level. She's in the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame and just a treasure as it pertains to our game of women's basketball and what she's done. I remember some of my early memories of watching college women's basketball were watching her Duke teams. There was a young woman, and I should have asked Gail about this, but I think her name is Peyton Black, and she used to wear these bows in her hair. And I remember those early Duke teams. Kira Orr, was, I believe, the point guard. But anyway, always loved watching Gail do her thing, and we're excited to have her on the show to not only talk about the SEC, but her observations, overall on some women's college basketball teams. But before we bring in Gail Gesten-Cours, let's talk about conference tournament championships and who's already in the NCAA tournament.
First quarter.
It is March. Woo-hoo. So we are in full March Madness mode here on Around the Rim. We've already had a week of conference tournaments and conference tournament championships happen. Still some conferences to be decided, but Big Monday is lurking right around the corner. And if you don't know, that's the day where the NCAA Women's Basketball Selection Committee will decide which 64 teams will make it into this year's field. Now, for updates, as of this podcast, we can tell you who has made the NCAA tournament to date. Now, again, that's as of this podcast taping, so there's still some going on. But Ohio Valley, Belmont is in. Atlantic 10, George Washington's in. Southern, Mercer is in. Mm-hmm. ACC, Louisville is in. SEC, South Carolina's in. Big 10, Ohio State is in. Pac-12, Oregon. MAC, Quinnipiac. Big 12, Baylor. American, UConn. Horizon, Green Bay. Summit, South Dakota State. West Coast, Gonzaga. Big East, DePaul. And those are the automatic qualifiers so far, but there's still some to be decided, including Mountain West, America East, the MAC, Big Sky, SWAC, MEAC, Conference USA, the WAC, Big West, the CAA, the Patriot League, Southland Conference, NEC, Atlantic Sun, Missouri Valley, Ivy League, Big South, and Sun Belt conferences all to come. Are there any shockers so far? Well, of course there are some. This wouldn't be the NCAA tournament. This would be March Madness if not. George Washington was definitely one, as Jen Rosati's team just, pushed through the A-10, and they are going to the NCAA tournament as an underdog. That was one of the big stories that stood out to me. I think the other one that was surprising, South Dakota State. Everyone thought that South Dakota would move on, but it was actually South Dakota State out of the Summit League. Not as big as a surprise, because South Dakota State always has great teams, but just a couple of automatic qualifiers that stand out that may change things a little bit. Charlie Cream was talking about, you know, out of the A-10, for example, George Washington being the upset with the automatic qualifier puts Dayton now in the field, in his opinion, with an at-large bid. So automatic qualifier still to be determined. At-large bids obviously will be the biggest mystery as we push through Big Monday. And Tarika and I are excited to announce that we will play a part in the Big Monday coverage. We can't tell you any specifics yet, but
Gotta wait, but
Around the Rim we'll have some exclusive Big Monday coverage for you, so we're looking forward to that. Now with that, let's head into the second quarter.
Second quarter, Inside the Huddle.
Well, hello fans. It is the second quarter, and we have a fantastic guest with you to talk March Madness just a little bit further in depth. And I just want to introduce, and obviously not introduced because everyone knows her, but I want to talk about Gail Gessenkors for a minute, because I played against her teams when she was the head coach at Duke. And, you know, you don't get to spend that much time around, you know, other teams' head coaches and things like that. But obviously followed everything when she went to Texas. I got to cover her teams there for the NCAA tournament. But it wasn't until I got to really know Gail myself that I had a full appreciation for the wonderful spirit, the wonderful person that she really is. Like, she is like one of the sweetest people I've ever met in my entire life. She has a positive spirit, always encouraging. So, I mean, it's just hard to put into words, but I just wanted to, before we get into her basketball acumen, just thank Gail for being the person that she is in this world. Welcome to the show, Gail Gessenkors.
Oh, gosh, you are so sweet. I love you, Miss China.
I love you, too. I meant every single word of that. Like, I seriously, you know, watching you from afar, I'm like, wow, she's a great coach. But getting to know you as a person has been by far my favorite part. So let's jump into that. I mentioned, you know, your career as a basketball coach, and it's been so cool to see you go back to Duke and do games this year. I saw your reunion with some of your Duke players. Like, that just... oh, that was amazing to see. But then you went on to Texas and then ultimately decided to get out of coaching. And now you are a basketball analyst, and we're getting to learn so much from you through broadcast. Tell me, what have you enjoyed most about this aspect of covering basketball?
Well, actually, I think going to the practices is what I love most, and talking with the coaches and just watching all of the different styles of coaching and motivating and teaching and communicating. So it's been, you know, there's no one right way. Every coach has their own style, and to me it's fascinating to watch. So I think my very favorite part is just going to the practices. It still feels like you're part of the game.
Yeah, you know, I was curious, if you could think back on your early days of coaching and then reflect on some of these practices that you've seen, how much has technique changed? How much have the players changed? How things are done? What are maybe some of the biggest differences you see that have taken place over time in our college women's game?
I think the coaches are much better now, you know, much better prepared. So they're doing much more defensively, offensively. The schemes defensively are different. They're more complex. Offensively, you see, I think, a much better job of coaches taking advantage of mismatches and really finding what works for their particular skill set better. I think it's a different and every single coach tells me the same thing when I talk to them. You know, it's a different kid nowadays. Like, you could really get on to kids. When you and I were younger, you know, coaches could really get on to you and just, you know, you just took it and you just, you know, did whatever they said, basically. And nowadays, kids, they have a little bit thinner skin, so you have to find a different way to get your message across to help them. So it's, I think it's different in the way that coaches have to communicate. They've got to spend more time with the players, helping them understand why they're doing things instead of just saying, go do this. They need to know the why.
That is such a great point and a great observation, Gail. I often say, you know, back in my day, back in our day, we would run through a wall just because coach said run through a wall, right? But times have changed and young people do want to know why. And I don't know if it's because they have so much access to technology and they can find out why through Google or, you know, kind of what's changed. But I always say the best head coaches are great managers of people. And what I mean by that is the coaches that have the ability to flex. That's something that I've learned along the way in my DISC assessment work. But, meaning, you know, I think at one point, and this is how my mother used to talk about this all the time. She said, I am who I am and you guys need to adjust to me, right? And of course, your mom, you do that. But I think these days coaches are challenged in their ability to flex, which means can you alter who you are a little bit if it's going to make you more effective to your players. Now, I'm not saying let up on your values or some of the fundamental things that you build your career or your program on, but if you're a dominant character, can you be a little bit more of an I, and I know I'm speaking in this terms, or a little bit more of an S rather, in order to cater to the personality of your players or to motivate your players? Is that hard for a coach to do, to try to teach or treat or motivate different players differently?
I think for some coaches it is. I think the successful coaches have learned how to motivate and really understand that every single person is motivated in a different way, you know. So what works for one player is not going to work for another. And you want to treat everybody the same. And I think when you're dealing with discipline, you must treat everybody the same. But when it's dealing with motivational tactics, I think everybody actually needs to be treated a little differently because you've got to find what works. And that's, I think that is a key, and it takes a lot of communication. You know, I feel for coaches now, they're pulled in so many different directions where, you know, you're doing the community service and you're going out on the speaking trail and you've got to be recruiting because you got to bring in the great players, but you need to understand and appreciate the reason that you're there are those 12 to 15 young ladies that are playing for you. You know, that's why you have that job. So making sure you take the time, that's where you should spend most of your time. Your commitment is to those young ladies that agreed to come play for you. So I think communication is the number one priority, and honest communication, you know, in really helping players to be successful, which is going to help your program to be successful.
Yeah, I think we need to have a whole nother podcast now that we're talking on coaching, because this is very enlightening. And we have a lot of coaches that listen. And, you know, that what was so exciting about you becoming an analyst and about you traveling, as I kept saying, you know, in that in between time, I was like, wow, we really need Gail somewhere in our game because you have so much wisdom. And I think one of the hardest things, and I've talked to several coaches about this, as a head coach, is you don't have a lot of places to go where people understand, you know, kind of what you're going through. You know, you have to be so strong and so confident with your assistant coaches, and you've got to be a leader with your players, and you don't want your administration, obviously, to feel like, you know, you're lost at any point. But coaches, I think, don't often have the sounding boards or the guidance and people that they can just, you know, listen to and learn from. And that's why I think, you know, people like you and Lynn Dunn and others being involved in the game, you know, coming back and even having a word of advice for these coaches is so beneficial. Okay, so we'll save that podcast for another time. So, but let's talk March Madness. Let's start out with the SEC, which I know you've spent a lot of time in this year, and God, we love listening to you and Pee Weezy, Pam Ward, on your broadcast. Just so, Tarika, so you know, Gail's nickname is Swaggy G. I can't take credit for that. That was a Carol Ross production, from what I understand.
From now on, this is going to be her name for the remainder of the podcast.
That's it. It's Swaggy G. So, but we love listening to you guys. What, I guess, if there were a couple of takeaways about SEC this year, what would they be?
Very, very strong at the top. I think, you know, what Vic Schaefer did at Mississippi State was just really remarkable, considering I think people forgot that he lost several starters, you know, to graduation. So, and he ended up moving Victoria Vivian's to a four. I thought that was the best move he could have done, because all of her numbers went up and gave him really another guard on the floor. So I think the top is very high. I think Dawn Staley really did one of her best coaching jobs because of the injuries she had to so many of her perimeter players, you know. SEC championship, she's going now with three bigs, you know, Herbert Harrigan at the three. And you think about last year when she had to go small because of injuries to her post players. And she had Alicia Gray, who was about 6 foot tall, playing at the four. So it's like, I'm very impressed with her ability. You talk about adjusting, her ability to adjust to the injuries, you know, and so I think those two in particular, I think, very, very strong at the top. And then you've got some others that, depending on matchups, can be great. You know, Georgia, I mean, they did, I think, just a remarkable job this year as well. And Texas A&M, you just never know. They can beat anybody. And then Tennessee, they're always a mystery, you know, to everybody. They can beat anybody, and then they can turn around and lose to anybody. So I think it's a really exciting time for the SEC in the tournament. They're getting, well, it looks like they're going to get seven in, and potentially five could host. And that's just really remarkable that you could have five out of the top 16, you know, that would be able to host.
Yeah, I think you're spot on with your observations, and in particular as it pertains to what Dawn has done. You forget that she had Alicia Gray and Kayla Davis. And I mean, those are two, they're pros, right? So in addition to what you already had with Asia Wilson, you know, you bring in two wings that ultimately are in the WNBA, you know, like they had a ton of talent. So I think what she did in the SEC tournament, you know, was like, wow, because she made those changes rather on the fly as needed. And then, you know, that Mississippi State team just looked, I mean, they looked unbeatable. And I will tell you this, I love Herbert Harrigan. I loved her last year. I thought she was so good. I knew that Jennings would come in and have to play a part, but I'm glad that they found minutes for her on the floor. But I think, you know, South Carolina's future in terms of what happens in the NCAA tournament is definitely about their perimeter play, as you mentioned, you know, not the point guard spot, obviously they're solid there, but, you know, how that two and three position actually pan out because of some of the changes they've had to make. What about player wise, Gail? I mean, you know, we hear so much about Asia Wilson. Who were some of the players you were most impressed with in the SEC this year?
Well, Vivian's, obviously. Tierra McCowan, you know, both for Mississippi State. Those two were just dominant forces for Mississippi State. I think Sophie Cunningham, I love to watch play. I know some people think she's, you know, a little aggressive, and but you know what? That's the way we all played. At least that's the way I, growing up, it's just like, you know, you had to fight for everything you got. And I love watching her play and knowing that she's always got two or three people on her. I think she is just fun to watch. And I think they're a fun team to watch as well, you know, when they get clicking now in the SEC tournament. And again, I talked about matchups. I think in the SEC tournament, and it tends to be this way, I think, as tournament time comes, it seems like officials let the players play a little bit more and get more physical. Well, I think that's really hard on teams that are rhythm teams, and I think Missouri's definitely a rhythm team. So I think, you know, they struggled when Georgia got real physical with them. So, but I really enjoy watching Sophie play. Those are probably some of my favorite players off the top of my head.
You mentioned Tennessee a moment ago, you know, just about their unpredictability, if that's a word. I'll make it up now if it's not.
I like it.
And how we have come to just kind of expect some ups and downs from them. If they're going to make a run in the NCAA tournament, what do you see needs to happen there with them or for them?
Well, I think they've got to take care of the ball. I mean, that's the biggest Achilles heel for them, is they've got two freshman point guards, the starting point guard, and then also subbing in as a freshman. Those two both average close to 3.5 turnovers a game. So you've got 7 turnovers from your point guard spot, average. Mm. And then when you jack up the pressure a little bit, and, you know, with the stress of the tournament, they need every possession, because, I mean, you've seen them when they're pressing and when they're on point, they can be so good, but they've got to learn to make better decisions with the basketball.
Yeah, I agree. And that's where, you know, we were rewarding the youth to start the season, right? We're like, wow, these freshmen have come in and they're ready and they're so good. But I don't know that we were as willing or ready to allow them to kind of work through some of their growing pains, you know, because they would come rather quickly, I think. And so we're seeing some of that now, whether it's manifesting in itself in turnovers or, you know, in various ways. You know, that youth is coming to light. I'm just curious, who would you say was the most impressive freshman in the SEC?
Well, Kennedy Carter, obviously. She's the one who, I mean, put up monster numbers, led all freshmen in the nation in scoring by I think, plus 10 points over anybody else, second best. Like, she was just phenomenal scoring offensively. Yeah. So, because when you watch her play, sometimes you want her to share the ball a little bit more. I think it's tough for A&M sometimes because she is at the point position. I think she's definitely a natural two that's playing the point. So mm-hmm. there are times when their offense becomes stagnant because she might come down and shoot. And sometimes she makes it, you know, she shoots a decent percentage, but then the rest of the team ends up watching. So she's the most impressive. She's dynamic. It's really, she's already got a pro body. It's kind of scary to think how good she could become once she understands the nuances of the game and how she's really got to get her teammates involved. And, you know, maybe they'll move her to a two. I don't know if they've got a point guard coming in. I hope so for Gary's sake, because, you know, Gary loves to run the offense. You know, he's always called all of the plays offensively. Well, it's probably been an interesting year for him, because many times Kennedy's already shot the ball before he's had the chance to relay what he wants to run offensively.
Right. And I knew, you know, I was being facetious when I asked the most impressive freshman, because God, she's been amazing. But I think she had some growing pains too. You know, there was some moments where I watched her in games where you could tell she was visibly frustrated. And, you know, I think that, the amount of learning that she had to do in trying to figure out the point guard spot, figure out that balance between passing and scoring. It just became apparent to me over time that she was very frustrated and definitely needs to work on some of the attitude aspects of her game. Because as a point guard, the more your emotions waver, the more unstable your team becomes. Now, that's a lot to ask for a freshman, but I think definitely some of the learning and the frustrations of the SEC, which can be a defensive beast on a point guard, came to head at some point. But no doubt, I agree with you. She's the most impressive freshman in the country, at least that I've seen. But I haven't seen everyone. So to Gail's point, the SEC right now, as Charlie Cream is predicting, Mississippi State is the 1 seed, South Carolina is a 2, Tennessee's a 3 seed, Georgia's a 4, Texas A&M's a 4, and then when you mentioned there might be an opportunity hosting wise, so those are the teams that would host being top 16 seeds, and then Missouri's a 5 and LSU's a 6. Fans, stay right where you are because we will have more with Gail Gesenkors coming up after the break in our third quarter, but don't forget, you can hop on the ESPN app under the Listen tab or Apple Podcasts to subscribe to Around the Rim. You'd be the first to receive the latest and greatest in women's basketball. And we are on Sirius XM Radio on channel 84. It's the ESPNU channel at 7 a.m. That's Sunday. You can hear Around the Rim on XM Radio and on social media. You can follow me at LaChyna Robinson. Tarika is at @SheKnowSports_. Use the hashtag Around the Rim if you have any questions, concerns, want to bring up a topic. We'd love to hear from you and just want to thank all of our fans for supporting our podcast and for supporting women's basketball. We'll see you in a minute after the break.
Third quarter.
Looking across the country, the championship games are happening as we speak for every conference. Goodness, in the American, obviously UConn ended up taking the crown. America East is still to be decided, but Hartford surprisingly has made the championship game, in playing Maine. So there's an opportunity for the 6th seed to advance there. Out of the ACC, Louisville prevailed. Was wondering if, Gail, you spent some time in the ACC, and the one team that's going to be in question, and you saw them up close in terms of the NCAA tournament selection Monday, is Virginia, a team that, Joanne Boyle, your longtime assistant coach, is the head coach there. Now, everyone is saying Virginia is in. When you watch them play, do you see an NCAA tournament team?
I do. I had them at Duke, and it was not their best. It was early. It wasn't their best game. And Joanne was they had lost their point guard, their starting point guard early in the season. So I think they were still adjusting a bit to that. But I think they're an NCAA tournament team visually. And I'm always going to pull for my former assistant, Joanne. She's a fantastic coach. So I'm certainly hoping they get in.
Yeah, no, I think they're definitely an NCAA tournament team, so I'm excited to see them move on. How what's the challenge for Muffet in getting her team of her shorter rotation? I remember you had a team that was banged up and ended up doing big things in the NCAA tournament. What is it going to take or what kind of changes may Muffet have to make to push her team and get the most out of them in the tournament, even though they're playing out of position and obviously we've got some injuries?
Yeah, Notre Dame, I think this is Muffet's best year of coaching. I mean, I've had them a couple of times, so impressed. Yeah, we did take a team to the Final Four. We had 8 players, so I think she's got down to seven scholarship players. And Marina Mabry, who's a natural wing, I mean, she's a big wing, and now playing the point. So that makes it even more difficult. At least I had my point guard when we had 8. That's your coach on the floor. So for Muffet to do this without a point guard, trying to make somebody a point guard is just even more impressive. So I don't know. I think they'll get to the Final Four. They're one of my picks to get to the Final Four, even though, they have limited numbers. They continue to amaze me, and Muffet continues to amaze me with her coaching. I know they lost in the ACC tournament, but that was 3 games in a row. They're never going to have to play 3 games in a row again. So I really, she has those experiences, and she always tends to have her team playing well come tourney time.
Yeah, she absolutely does. I mean, I agree with you that I think she's done, no offense to Jeff Walls, because Louisville has had a great year, but in my opinion, she was the ACC Coach of the Year, and I'm sure has a very good chance of being the National Coach of the Year. Moving along to the A-10, that's where Jen Rosati actually comes in, as GW is the 5 seed, is going to the NCAA tournament, so really excited for them. You got to see DePaul out of the Big East. What did you think about the Blue
Demons?
Game.
I actually saw both of the semis and the finals.
What'd you think about the Blue Demons?
Ooh, I would not want to play them going into the NCAA tournament. If they're hitting their threes, I mean, they just spread you out and they come at you nonstop. It's so much fun to watch. I loved watching them play, and I haven't had them this year. I had them last year, and just, you know, we all love Doug Bruno. He's one of the very best. So
yeah,
if I'm any other team, and especially if it's a team that plays zone, that relies on zone, you could be in for a long night because they can shoot the three.
It is going to be trouble. So there's still some things to be decided in the Atlantic Sun. You'll let McPhee, who it was on our show from Jacksonville. They will be playing Florida Gulf Coast. Carl Semesco's team has been fantastic this year, but we'll find out who will go out of the Atlantic Sun. Big 12, we saw Baylor move on. Without Christy Wallace, do they have a shot at a Final Four, in your opinion, Gail?
I actually believe they will get to the Final Four. I know that a lot of people don't think so. If you haven't, I watched that Baylor-Texas game. Oh my goodness gracious! Did you? That game was so fun to watch.
It was
big. They're big. Both teams. I mean, both teams could get to the Final Four. They're that good. They're skilled. They're big. They're strong. They're athletic. They're physical. And as I said before, I just feel like going into the tournament, the officials let you play more physical, which is to their advantage. And that Alexis Morris, who's taken Christy Wallace's spot, that little freshman point guard, she is something special. If you haven't seen her play, Alexis Morris is going to be special.
Yes. I had the opportunity to call a Baylor game early this year when they played Stanford. So obviously watched a lot of tape on them. And, you know, she wasn't playing a ton because of Christy, but comes in highly regarded. And I think she has really earned some stripes here, you know, with the injury to Christy, in terms of what she'll do in the NCAA tournament. Big South and Big Sky have a lot to be determined. Big Ten, Ohio State, congratulations to them. Kevin McGuff's team winning both the regular season as well as the tournament. A lot to be decided still in the Big West. The Colonial Conference USA will be interesting. Western Kentucky, UAB, expected to be the two teams that will battle it out for the championship there. But a lot to be decided. Green Bay has made the field. Ivy League will be another league that's still a lot to be decided, but we'll be keeping our eyes on. Quinnipiac is back. That was cool to see. out of the MAC, as they call it, M-A-A-C, and then we have the MAC, M-A-C, that still has a lot to be decided there as well. So a lot of conference tournaments are still going on. But, Gail, we want to thank you for your time in talking women's basketball with us. And where will we be able to watch you? You don't know where you're going yet, right?
No, we find out. We'll all find out Monday night, I guess. So we'll get on the computer, make our flights quickly as possible.
I know. It's going to be a lot of fun. I am ready for March Madness. So thank you so much for all you've done, really, with the coverage all season. And we enjoy listening to you. And tell Pee Weezy I said hello. And I miss her, actually. I do.
Well,
we miss
you. You need to come visit.
I know. I am going to definitely come and visit you soon, but just grateful for everything, you know, that you do for the game, and we'll be keeping an eye on you. Now, Gail, what is your, can we follow you? Can the fans follow you on Twitter? Remind me your Twitter handle.
I don't know what it is. Something with a G in it. I'm just an old ball coach. You know, we don't know that stuff.
I know. It is. I think it's Gail Goes 10. is her Twitter handle. So fans, if you want to keep up with Gail and all the great stuff she's got going on, and she's very inspirational.
I figured China would know what my Twitter handle is, and I don't. So
of course I do. I'm stalking you all the time. But thank you so much for joining the show. We'll see you soon.
Thank you, China.
Fourth quarter. Out of bounds.
So it's time for our fourth quarter. And Tarika, I just want to vent for a moment about awards. You know, there's just been some very surprising revelations, lack thereof, conclusions, results that have come out of some of our women's basketball postseason awards. One of the big ones is that Jordan Canada was not on the list for top point guard in the country. And obviously that's just a travesty because she's amazing and definitely deserved to be on every award list, a finalist for top point guard. That's Jordan Canada out of UCLA for those that do not know. Now, my other problem is that I feel like what I've run into, and I'm speaking from personal experience, right? Like, everybody, you can vote for whoever you want to. We all have different criteria. I'll give you an example because I'm very transparent. And that, you know, in the ACC, I pick Muffet McGraw as my coach of the year. Now, I love Jeff Walls. Always have. I call him the overachiever because he always does the most with the least, right? And to me, that's the definition of a great coach. That to me is the definition even of coach of the year. So the coach who has maybe had to go above and beyond, whether that's make changes based on injury, which is obviously the what happened with Notre Dame and Muff McGraw, or maybe didn't have as much talent as some of the other coaches, mm-hmm. and, you know, stretched that, but they overachieved. They did more than maybe what was expected or what was predicted or those kind of things. So that's my criteria, but we all have our own. But one thing I've run into in talking to some people that do vote is we have to stop voting or not voting for people that we don't like. Okay. Separate the person from the job they do. I run into this even in the WNBA sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm not voting for this player because I don't like how she acts. Now, you know, if you want character and behavior to be part of your award, I guess that's fine. I just have a problem with performance versus person. Okay. Vote for the performance because that's the criteria of the award in most situations. Now, if you have a choice between two people and you want to make someone's, you know, character or whatever you want to call it, your deciding factor, but just because you don't like somebody or you have not have positive interactions with them, don't keep them out of a position where they could possibly gain an award. Now, I'm not saying that's what happened with Jordan Canada by any stretch. Actually, I'm talking more
about from a coach's perspective, I'm sure.
Right. And also, like I said, I've run into it in the WNBA. But Tarika, am I wrong for this stance?
You are absolutely not wrong because awards are based on the merit of the performance of the award that they are categorized by. And for anyone to... Basically, if we're going to call a spade, be as petty to not vote for someone because of personal feelings, then I don't know. Maybe that reflects more on the person that has the vote than the actual nominee to me.
Tarika, you are saying a bunch right now. And yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I'm not, like I said, feel free, hashtag around the rim if you want to get at us. You know, I'm not saying that this has to be everybody, the way that everybody approaches awards. I just wish that's how it's done. Now, I don't think it's just women's basketball that experience.
Oh, see, you took the words out of my mouth, girl.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no.
Because
sure
it happens we hear this every year in the NFL when it comes to Hall of Fame voting. We hear this every year in baseball when it comes to who should get into the Hall of Fame. It's never based on merit of what it is that they did in their respective sport. But 9 times out of 10, I don't like the way he or she blank.
Right. Like, if you committed some crimes, yes, you should definitely, there could be some conversation about whether or not you get into the Hall of Fame. You know baseball better than I do, but correct me if I'm wrong. Wasn't there some issue with Pete Rose?
While I won't name names, I will say there were some issues with gambling. There were some issues with alleged PED usage and that kind of thing. I get it. But I mean, I need a cold, hard conviction for me. When you are regarded as one of the best to ever play this game and no one has come close to touching you. And yet it's been years and no one will even give you a half a percentage of the vote. That's not about your performance. That's about their moral judgment of you. And at some point, where's the line drawn?
Right. So Tarika wants a hardcore conviction. Okay, people. So we need to listen.
Let me see. Let me see the documents. I need receipts.
Okay. But anyway, I'm going to get off my high horse and stop, you know, preaching everybody about how they vote. But I just seriously crossed my mind a lot watching tweets, because I, as much as I tweet, I see more things than I actually respond to. Like, I see a lot of things, but I just don't always respond to everything, because I would be all over everybody's timeline all day long. And I feel like part of branding is consistency, right? So I really try to stick to the things that I'm passionate about. That's what I use my voice for, because I want people to know what they can expect from me. And not that I don't dibble, you know, I'll dab into some football every once in a while.
And we thank God. We thank God when you don't.
Okay, exactly. I'll get called out on it real quick and I'll go back into the corner. But I did see a lot of tweets about this, so I wanted to bring it up. Fans, that is it for our show this week. We'll be back, like we said, next week. We're going to try to double dip next week on our coverage. Not sure we're going to be able to pull it off, but we're going to definitely try to do something for Selection Monday, as we mentioned, and then also do a preview once the brackets are released. So until next week, Tarika and I will be around. So hit us up and watch lots of women's basketball.
And listen too, guys, I'm a fun person and I like to play March Madness brackets. So if you guys are out there with your women's basketball March Madness brackets and you guys want to challenge me to see if I am a beast at this, which I claim to be, then please hashtag Around the Rim and tag me at @SheKnowSports_. Invite me to your women's basketball bracket. I will play and I will win.
Tarika has messed around and called some upsets that have just blown me away, because I'm supposed to be the basketball expert. And then Tarika's like, oh, I knew the L.A. Sparks were going to win at Minnesota in 2016. And you're like, really, Tarika? She did call it. She did. She did. So hit Tarika up with your brackets. Invite her to your group at @SheKnowSports_, hashtag Around the Rim. And we'll talk to you guys next week. Peace out.
Peace.
Thank you for listening to Around the Rim. Check out more podcasts from ESPN on the ESPN app.